Today we are doing physics, and everything is working. Do you have homework for me? Awesome. I'll try to deduct some more points. Boy, he really likes to deduct points. Okay, so we've got a charge zipping through space, and it's not just going at a constant velocity, which would be really boring, but it's accelerating. It's going to emit radiation. Photons will come out, created out of nothingness. Except from the motion. So we are going to focus on the angular distribution. That's this quantity, the rate at which power goes into a given unit solid angle subtended by a detector. And we can start from the non-relativistic expression. But of course, I'm especially interested in the extra stuff that happens in relativity, especially really interesting from accelerators when you get really close to the speed of light. So I think we had previously worked out this non-relativistic expression. I'll just remind you, it's fairly simple. Q squared over 4 pi c in Gaussian units. And then the magnitude of n hat cross beta dot quantity squared, which is only true for beta much less than 1. And the absolute value squared just means this vector gets dotted into itself. These are all real vectors here. In contrast to when we did monochromatic radiation, and we sometimes work with complex fields. So to go to relativity, we will start with the fields. And well, E of xt that is going to be seen at a detector is going to be have two pieces that we've written before, Q times n minus beta over gamma squared r squared 1 minus beta dot n hat at the retarded point, and then we have Q over C second term n cross this slightly more complicated vector n hat minus beta cross beta dot all over the distance from the detector to the emission point at the retarded time, 1 minus beta dot n hat cubed in the denominator, also at the retarded time. We're mostly interested in, okay, again, we have this charge Q, we have our detector. We're mostly interested in the detector being macroscopic distance away from the charge. So we're going to focus on the radiation terms. And we'll neglect this in the radiation zone. So this is the radiation term, which we're usually interested in, but if you really want to get up close to that charge, you'll need the other one too, and the near zone or intermediate zone. This E is the only complicated formula because B is simply N hat cross E at the retarded time. So these are the relativistically valid fields, and now the general formula still holds for dp d omega, namely r squared at from the retardation point n hat dotted into the pointing vector. Welcome. We're doing the angular distribution from radiated charges. Yes. This happens all the time in astrophysics. Your detector, I guess, would be one of your Earth telescopes, for instance. Okay, so we can get the pointing vector, we can get this R, we're going to have some algebra to work out like we love to do. Maybe even calculus, probably not calculus. We've already done the calculus. So if you remember, we're characterizing the trajectory of the particle as a function of its proper time, is kind of the starting point of the whole derivation. We've got a trajectory through space as viewed in our reference frame, but as a function of the proper time. It's useful to express it that way. And this vector is, of course, going to be our R at the retarded time. Okay, so let's do the pointing vector. C over 4 pi, E cross B. We don't have to complex conjugate either one because this is not complex fields. And clearly E and B are right angles to each other, because B is the cross product with E. And so this can also be written C over 4 pi n hat magnitude of E squared. Okay, so I'll calculate this in the radiation zone using this formula for the electric field, which in my notes I rewrote, but I think I don't need to rewrite it because it's sitting right there on the board. Okay, so one point about this is that this is the quantity that's of interest if I'm sitting here with my baseball mitt catching photons as it whips by, and it's telling me how much radiation is hitting this per unit, solid angle per unit time. Okay, so what is this S? Calculated here. This is the energy flux observed at a fixed detector in the observer's rest frame. And it will be expressed as a function of the detection time, the clock in our frame, as we are looking to detect these photons as a frame. I'm losing my train of thought and my sanity. A function of of detection time. So I'm being a bit pedantic here. We could write this also maybe in a more explicit notation as d squared of the energy. It's a doubly differential quantity with respect to area and time. Time of observation, which is an important distinction compared to what I'm going to do next, as you'll see in a minute. It's something we have to be careful about. Okay, so that's my point of view with my baseball mitt catching photons. But that's not the only quantity we could be interested in. Probably the person with the telescope catching photons, that is what they would care about. Or if you're at the APS or LCLS doing experiments with the synchrotron radiation coming out from those accelerated charges, that's what you would care about too, the rate at which photons are going to come into your apparatus to shine on the molecules or atoms that you're experimenting on. But the second quantity you're often interested in is the rate photons are coming out from the particle. Okay, the rate of emission as opposed to the rate of detection. That's going to be a different number. One way to think of this is, suppose you're designing an accelerator and you need to figure out at what rate do you have to supply energy to the particle to keep it going at the same kinetic energy. That would be this number that we're going to work out. Okay. So let's connect the detection time to the emission time. So we'll call the detection time, we've been calling over there T, we'll call the emission time, which is also the retarded time, I'll call TR. Okay, so the connection from the definition of the retarded point and time is TR will be, of course, T minus R, which depends on TR divided by the speed of light. That's the point on the light cone, the time on the light cone of emission. So, in other words, T is TR plus this R of TR over C. And we're going to need a differential. I guess we are doing calculus after all. DT then will be DTR plus 1 over C d by dTR of the vector x minus r of tr times dTR. Okay, that derivative is going to be simple enough, right? Because this is like the vector x minus R of T R squared dotted into itself, right? But then to the 1/2. So when you take the derivative, that's going to bring it down into the denominator to the minus 1/2, and you add a numerator. And so that I claim looks like minus 2 over 2 dr dtr dotted into x minus r of tr. And I'll and then divided by that denominator to the 1/2 up here. So just abbreviating the painful taking of derivatives, in the end, it's a fairly simple quantity, minus C times beta dot n hat. Right, this vector over its magnitude is n hat. Okay, so to conclude, dt, which we're needing here, is 1 minus beta dot n hat dtr. And that means we can use that to relate the power per unit solid angle radiated or emitted to the power detected per unit solid angle. So, okay, time for new chalk. Now dp d omega detected, right? We already worked out r squared n hat dot s at the detector. Q squared or 4 pi C magnitude of this interesting vector that is now relativistically correct. Going like the acceleration with lots of velocity-dependent factors, 1 minus beta dot n hat to the 6th power in the denominator. And so you can see we're going to get an extra factor of that quantity in the denominator when we look at dp d omega emitted. Basically the same formula, but this quantity in the numerator is the same. Guess I lost a square bracket. But now we have 1 minus beta dot n hat to the 5th power. And there's this analogy, I think I read it in Jackson, that I wrote in the notes. To firing bullets from a gun, just for target practice, I hope, that as I'm coming along trying to fire bullets at a target, the rate that the bullets hit the target is different than the rate of bullets you have to feed to the gun. Don't try that at home. Okay, so we have the general formulas. Now I want to look in the details, what it actually means in terms of the angle the photons are coming out or being detected. So there are two basic standard cases that are usually considered, the linear accelerator or the circular motion. And we'll treat each of those. So the first case is linear motion with acceleration parallel to velocity. Then we can put in all the angles here, right? Beta cross beta dot will vanish. And we know this structure of this n hat cross beta dot, that will look like sine theta being squared. So let's look at the emission case, dp d omega, with actual angles then will look like q squared acceleration squared u dot squared in our reference frame over pi c cubed sine squared theta, and then that denominator will look like 1 minus beta cos theta to the fifth power. And this does reduce to Larmor formula at beta much less than 1. But we're a little more interested in the highly relativistic limit of this. Right, so it just looks like sine squared theta, like, which we said is like a dipole emitter. Accelerate, you're going in straight line motion, and you'll see a sine squared distribution of the photons coming out mostly sideways, like that, in a sine squared distribution. Okay. But all that changes if we're getting close to the speed of light. Before I look at that, I should maybe work out the total rate of emission. Have to do more calculus by integrating this over angles. Because that's an interesting quantity too. The rate at which the energy is coming out of our charged particle being accelerated. And this integral, I'll just assert without proof. You can work it out yourself in your vast square time if you want. You get a u dot squared, c squared, 2/3 over c cubed, and then a 1 minus beta cubed. which is interesting because this emission power then is 2q squared u dot squared, acceleration squared, over 3c cubed, which is the non-relativistic result, but now we have gamma to the sixth power. Okay, don't forget, gamma is going to be like 1,000 to 100,000. So that gamma to the sixth adds up. That's can be a very big number. I didn't hear any of you gasp. That's better. Okay, what I'm especially interested in is looking at the angle distribution in the ultra-relativistic limit. Okay, we don't get to do this every day in our slow vehicles, but we can imagine what's going on for these charges at these accelerators. So I'm going to set beta to 1 minus a tiny amount, delta. And, of course, delta will be much less than 1. And so I shouldn't point to this. I'm interested in the angle thing, the fact that you're going to have 1 minus a number very close to 1 times cos theta means that this will be a very big number. And divided, you're dividing by a very tiny, tiny number. So we have some binomial stuff to do here. Delta much less than 1. So this means very small theta now will dominate. And so, for instance, we'll set the first two terms of the Taylor expansion of cos theta, 1 minus a half theta squared. Neglect the higher terms, and then gamma, right, 1 over root 1 minus delta squared is approximately 1 over root 2 delta, and so 1 minus beta cos theta to the minus 5. We'll do the binomial once again. That's 1 minus delta, 1 minus a half theta squared, all to the minus fifth power. Of course, all these factors of 1 are going to drop out, and it's going to go to delta plus 1 half theta squared minus theta squared delta over 2 to the minus 5. Which I can rewrite approximately as delta to the minus 5 times 1 plus theta squared over 2 delta to the minus 5. And, of course, the sine squared theta in the numerator will be approximately theta squared. And we can put all that together and get an approximate formula at these small angles that are totally dominating now in the relativistic limit. Be a q squared u dot squared again over 4 pi c cubed. Then keeping track of all my factors, we'll have a 2 to the 5th gamma to the 10th theta squared over 1 plus gamma squared theta squared to the 5th power. So that's the point of this ultra-relativistic limit. And can just say a few things about this. This, if you maximize it, this is maximum at an angle theta max. I'll spare you those details. 1 over 2 gamma, this ultra-relativistic limit. And one thing of interest is the peak intensity dp d omega emission max at that angle ends up looking like 2048 over 3125 q squared u dot squared over pi c cubed, and then gamma only to the 8th power. Not nearly as scary as gamma to the 10th. And if you integrate this formula, it does agree with our previous result. So this is a good approximation. Okay, so physically, what's going on? Let me come back to my little diagram. In the non-relativistic limit for linear acceleration, the charge is emitting a sine squared distribution. It's all coming out sideways to the radiation. You go to ultra-relativistic, that becomes this. Very highly peaked in the forward direction. Say that again. This is the angle between the emission point and the detector, right? Yeah. Right, so this angle is 1 over 2 gamma. Okay, so that's the linear acceleration case. Let's do the circular case. And so this, by the way, this geometry is, well, it's not exactly true, but like the LCLS, LINAC coherent light source at Stanford. It is a linear accelerator, but it's not exactly applicable here because, I mean, that is what's going on when they are boosting up, accelerating the electrons or the positrons. I forget which they're using at Stanford. Probably electrons. But in the actual accelerator, they actually produce the radiation in undulator sections that wiggle the electrons up and down sideways. So it's not really applicable to those regions. they do that. I think I made that sketch last time that that makes coherent emission from all these bunches of the electrons and becomes a laser, basically. The emissions stimulate the emission going forward and it amplifies. And so, for instance, the peak brightness at a typical photon energy like 10 keV that is used at common for both the APS at Argonne, third generation machine, and the fourth generation LCLS free electron laser. The LCLS is 10 to the 8 to 10 to the 10 times brighter than the APS. It's pretty amazing. Make a just one generation change and you've got 10 orders of magnitude higher brightness. This was a big deal. I attended some of the planning meetings before it was built, and I thought, come on, engineers, you're going to really get 10 orders of magnitude out of this improvement? I was skeptical, but it exceeded the design, the final result. Pretty amazing facility. Okay. Second case is a charge Q is in motion that we can view as circular. Let's just say it's instantaneously at the moment of emission we're talking about. We can approximate it by circular motion. So we've got the APS, the advanced photon source at Argonne. You have positrons going in a circle. Might wonder why positrons are going in a circle instead of electrons. The reason is that there is occasionally in the beam pipe, occasionally an atom or a molecule that is going to get hit by this and get ionized. It'll become a positively charged ion. And if it was an electron, it would tend to draw the ions into the beam, but because they're positrons, it pushes the ions away. So even though it's harder to make positrons, a lot harder than to make a beam of electrons, it's worth it for the lifetime of the positrons in the beam, because each one you're going to want to use to make many photons. Okay, so our coordinate system has the motion, let's say beta, at this instant of emission we're talking about is in this direction, which we'll call the z-axis, instantaneous z-axis. The acceleration, of course, for circular motion will be at right angles, beta dot. And we'll say that that is magnitude of beta dot times the unit vector in the x hat direction. And so the y direction, just to complete the three-dimensional coordinate system, is of course x hat cross y hat is out of the board, like so. That'll be our 3D spherical, and then we'll base spherical coordinates on this for a detector. We'll have an observation direction now at some spherical polar angles, theta phi, going to our detector. That's not a very realistic depiction because we know all the photons are going to come out here, actually. But anyway, if they were slow, I could use that drawing. But that's not really where the photons are going to go when you're so close to the speed of light, with gamma around, I think, 17,000 at the APS. So this theta phi, right, that's the vector we call n hat. Okay, so let's come back to our formula that controls everything. dp d omega emission q squared over 4 pi c magnitude of n hat cross n hat minus beta cross beta dot squared over 1 minus beta dot n hat to the fifth power. So I want to specialize this formula to our geometry of this circular motion. Okay, so that is also going to then equal q squared over 4 pi c. We're going to have the magnitude of beta dot factor out from all the vector stuff. And now that will multiply n hat cross n hat cross x hat. For this term, and then minus beta n hat cross z hat cross x hat squared over that 1 minus beta cos theta to the fifth. To evaluate these cross products, we can use some things like, let's write the n hat vector in spherical coordinates. You all remember this from ENM1, x hat sine theta cos phi, y hat sine theta sine phi, z hat cos theta. And so I can write a few intermediate results like n hat cross x hat will be minus sine theta sine phi z hat plus cos theta y hat, and n hat cross n hat cross x hat will be messy minus cos squared theta minus sine squared theta sine squared phi x hat plus cos phi sine phi sine squared theta y. You don't want me to write all this. It's in the notes. But I'll write one more. N hat cross z hat cross x hat is really just n hat cross y hat. And that is simple, also minus cos theta x hat plus sine theta cos phi z hat. So, plugging it all in, trust me, it comes out to be this. dp d omega emission has the q squared, it has the u dot squared, it has the 4 pi c cubed. It has 1 over 1 minus beta cos theta cubed. And then it has 1 minus sine squared theta cos squared phi over gamma squared 1 minus beta cos theta squared. So we have phi and theta dependence. It's more complicated geometry than the linear geometry, where we only had a theta dependence. Of course, we had cylindrical symmetry in that case and no phi dependence. So now let's take the ultra-relativistic limit. That's the most fun of all. I guess we don't need this figure anymore. So, basic limit, gamma is much greater than 1. And as before, 1 minus beta cos theta is approximately 1 over 2 gamma squared, 1 plus gamma squared theta squared. And so dp d omega emission is going to go in this limit q squared a squared over 4 pi c cubed 8 gamma to the sixth for 1 plus gamma squared theta squared cubed times 1 minus 4 gamma squared theta squared cos squared phi over 1 plus gamma squared theta squared squared. Which we will analyze a bit farther. So this formula, if you look at it carefully or plot it, you find that it peaks at theta approximately 0, but with a spread around theta like a root mean square spread in the theta angle of order 1 over gamma in this limit of gamma much greater than 1. Before I talk more about the angle stuff, let's quickly work out the total power radiated. Or emitted, if you like. And you could obtain it by integrating that. It gets the same if we just use the relativistic formula, 2/3 q squared gamma sixth over c times beta dot squared minus beta cross beta dot squared. Which goes in this relativistic limit to 2q squared a squared over 3c squared gamma sixth 1 minus beta squared for circular motion. Which is an interesting result. For a reason I'll show you in a second, which can be simplified to 2q squared a squared over 3c cubed times gamma just to the fourth power. Okay, so the angular distribution, if I plot it, looks like this figure centered on theta equals 0, and this full width at half maximum is what I called theta RMS, is approximately 1 over gamma. So if you're thinking about what it's going to look like at a detector, right, basically each point is sending out photons, boom, at right angles. So if you think of the positron going around in a circle, it's like a searchlight sending out its photons, and if for a fixed detector, each time it goes around, you get one blip of pulse of photons from one positron. One of the most interesting things to do with this, now that we have both the circular and the linear case, is to compare the energy loss rate of the two geometries. That's an important design feature. If you're designing a source of photons, it's something you've really got to think hard about, the result of the following derivation. So let's first talk about circular motion. The rate of momentum change. That's dp dt. And we're talking about relativistic momentum, so that's d by dt of gamma m times the 3 velocity. That derivative acts both on gamma and on u in general. So there is one term, which is the ordinary acceleration times gamma m. And then there's a term mu d gamma dt. But for circular motion, right, you're mostly deflecting the particle. You're not changing the gamma much. And so this is a negligible contribution, this term, to the rate of change of momentum. And we'll neglect that. So the total power emitted for the circular motion case is 2/3 q squared over m squared c cubed gamma squared in terms of this dp dt squared. It looks like that, with an extra gamma squared factor. And in contrast, the similar expression for linear geometry, linear accelerator, looks like 2/3 q squared over m squared c cubed times dp dt squared, which looks very similar, except there's no gamma squared. So the circular is gamma squared times the linear for a given amount of force that you have to apply to make the accelerator in the first place. So this is one reason why it's more effective, really, to make a linear accelerator if you have to invest in your machinery that's going to do the acceleration up to particles close to the speed of light. You're going to lose a lot more energy in the circular geometry, but there is a competing advantage that the charges make multiple passes. With the linear one, they're just going to come by once. So let's go through a real life example and see what the numbers really look like at the old fashioned third generation synchrotron at Argonne, which is still a pretty darn impressive facility. If any of you are ever at Argonne, I encourage you to take a look at it, try to get a tour. Okay, now we're talking about the real world, not just a bunch of math. And I gave a link to the website in the notes. Maybe I won't write it on the board. Okay, so the APS machine. We have positrons circulating at 7 GeV. If someone tells you that, how do you tell me what gamma is? Can any of you do that in your head? Gamma mc squared is 7 GeV, is that what you're saying? Do you know mc squared for a positron in EV? Anyone? No one? No idea? Half an MeV. Very good. So actually, when you see a number like that, they're actually telling you the kinetic energy, not the total energy of the particles. So technically speaking, gamma minus 1 would be 7 GeV over 511. KeV, which would, and obviously the one is basically going to be negligible. So in this case, you can just get that gamma is like 14,000 for this standard mode of operation of the APS. What are some gammas that you astronomers encounter? How big are they? Any idea? No? You see TeV sometimes? For electrons or protons? For electrons. TeV, that's 10 to the 12, right? 10 to the 12 EV. Okay, so that would be another two orders of magnitude more than that, yeah. Which is around a million, isn't it? Yeah. Okay, what other numbers are interesting? The theta RMS we were talking about of our searchlight coming past, firing photons at our detector, or our experiment, which would then probably have some types of detectors, charged particles, maybe other photons. This, we said, was 1 over gamma, which works out to be, if you plug in the numbers, 70 microradians. Now, this is away from what they call the insertion devices, because actually the APS has also these undulator sections where you can get more concentrated, higher energy photons out. So this is all kind of just in the standard regions away from those undulator or insertion device sections. The beam circumference of this big circle you can look up is 768 meters, which is 2 pi times the radius. That is not the distance to the detector, that's the radius. And so the circulation frequency is, of course, C. Basically, that's the velocity, to a good approximation, over 2 pi r, which works out to be 390 kilohertz is the frequency. I should say that's 300 kilohertz times 2 pi, to be careful. I already divided by 2 pi. So that is already frequency F. That's the frequency you'll get the searchlight coming past you. Well, I guess I called it nu in the notes. Let's call it nu. And so we could calculate the average energy the positron loses to radiation emission per second. I think these are interesting numbers to go through. That's this P emission in the circular formula. 2e squared a squared gamma fourth over 3c cubed in electrostatic units or Gaussian units. E is 4.8 10 to the minus 10 electrostatic units. C, of course, will take 10 to the 10 centimeters per second in Gaussian units, and A, acceleration, the magnitude of du dt is u squared over r, that we all know from elementary physics, which is approximately c squared over the radius. And finally, I put all these numbers together. I won't drag you through the arithmetic. The number I get for this is 7.4 times 10 to the 16. Uh, Sorry, that was A. The number is this is 1.2 ergs per second just from one positron. And 1 joule, to remind you, is 10 to the 7 ergs. So, in one revolution, one positron emits 1.9 GeV of energy. That's out of its 7 GeV of energy. That's quite a big fraction. So if we want to find the total amount in the APS, like to find how much power is just to make the positrons, keep them going in the accelerator, we need the total current, find the number of positrons circulating, so the APS beam current is typically 300 milliamps, which is 1.9 times 10 to the 18 positrons crossing a point per second. The density of positrons the total number of positrons is 1.9 10 to the 18 per second, right, times 1 over the revolutions per second, and that is 4.9 times 10 to the 12 positrons actually circulating at any given time. And so the total energy you have to supply to keep those positrons going at 7 GeV will be this 4.9 10 to the 12 times 1.2 ergs per second times 10 to the minus 7 joule per erg. And that works out to be 0.58 megawatts. And you can compare that, as I did in the notes, to the average energy in a nuclear power plant. Do you know how much that is, roughly? No idea? A nuclear power plant, the average of the over 400 plants worldwide is 0.85. gigawatts. So just to keep the energy supplied for these positrons requires about 0.1% of the energy of a nuclear power plant. And that doesn't include like the energy to keep the pumps running, the vacuum, the detectors running, all the other things that are going on there. We could have 1,000. Yeah, it's true. But I guess they viewed this as somewhat expensive. In 24 hours, I have this number in the notes, 24 hours of running, APS uses 14,000 kilowatt hours which is the standard unit you get charged for electricity, kilowatt hours. And the sort of standard price is 10 cents per hour. So basically, there are $1,400 worth of photons that you bought by plugging your APS into the wall. In fact, they find this rather expensive, and I think they only run it about 8 months out of the year, partly for the electricity cost, but partly because they do have to do a lot of maintenance every year and keep all the batteries and everything and the accelerator working properly. Okay, so that's all really cool, and now LCLS, I'll just mention, we said already it's like around 10 to the 9, 10 to the 10 brighter. Just amazing. And that uses energy too, but I won't tell you how much. I think we'll stop there today, and next time I'll answer your favorite questions. The frequency distribution of the radiation. I think you came in late. I had an announcement about the homework. I posted the final homework set.
Okay.
How's
that due?
Oh, it's due May 5th. It's like the Tuesday of finals week. But if you want to turn it in earlier, that's okay. You can just drop it, slip it under my door if I'm not there. Oh, there's one. It's part of your homework? Okay, got it. Yeah, well, there's always some stray atmospheric gas, right, inside the beam. Let's take a straight section of the beam. Okay, so let's say it hits here. Here, the beam is, you know, maybe this thick. It happens to make an ion here.
Oh, sorry, it's been ionized.
This would be drawn into the beam if it was if the beam was negatively charged.
Okay, so it was a stray atmosphere.
Right? Yeah, that's right.
Okay. My second question is, so I know you say this is kind of like a searchlight, like a blink, but that's just for one. So you have a bunch of